So I read an article once by a pastor, and he said that they had a sign out in front of the building the way we do, and he said that he'd put a new sign up. He changed the sign at his church building, and the sign he put up is this one. So this church isn't full of hypocrites. We still have room for one more. And I love that sign, and I've threatened to do it several times here, and I always chicken out, but I love it. And I think it's good because it plays to a stereotype. I think a lot of people realize that the Christians have this reputation in our world of being busybodies who are always giving advice but not necessarily keeping it themselves. That there's a frustration with Christians because whether or not the advice is good, the advice may be great, but if you're not following it yourself, then there's a question, well, how good could it really be? You're not acting like you think it's very important, very good advice. So I understand why this sign plays into that mental image people have. And in the defense of all Christians, I think I should make at least one stab at a defense. I would say that Christians are humans, and humans have always known it's easier to see your flaws than mine, right? Yours are out there and mine are somewhere back behind my eyeballs. So of course I can see your flaws better than mine. So that is a legitimate defense. It's not a good defense, but it's at least real. But there's another defense, and I mentioned this to the children. It's the idea, well, yeah, you made me. That there's something out there that made me do it. That I wouldn't have punched Caden if he hadn't made me so angry. Right? When I'm on a diet and somebody brings a box of donuts to work, they're making me eat them, right? That there are these things out there, right? And that they shouldn't do that because it would be better for me if they didn't, right? So there's this idea that they're undermining my progress. They're just bad people who drive me crazy or whatever it is. That there is a problem out there. And so I think a lot of times Christians say, well, look, why don't they fix themselves? If they quit eating the donuts, right, then I won't have a donut problem. If they quit making me angry, then I won't have an anger problem. So there's this tendency I think we have to externalize our own problems and say, well, it's from the people out there. And that's what I love about this story, is it's going against that. It's saying, well, we have a hypocrisy problem, maybe. Well, let's welcome in more hypocrites. Instead of saying it's all because of them, it's actually saying, no, we welcome hypocrites. So I think that's actually in keeping with what Jesus teaches, is that the problem is not out there, the problem is in here. So it won't hurt you if one more hypocrite joins your fellowship. So I really do like this sign. We're going to be starting a new conversation today. We're going to be looking at the big picture idea of what it is that Jesus came to do. And so one way of looking at what it was Jesus came to do is to restore the harmony between creation and God, between God and humanity in particular, that God meant us to be in harmony with him, and we are not. And so what Jesus is doing is restoring that. And so we're going to be looking at this passage in Mark's gospel as a way of seeing a piece of that big idea. So we are in Mark chapter 7, and we read about these Pharisees. So they are doing exactly what I think a lot of us do. They're saying that the problem is out there. And so we see that here. The Pharisees and some legal experts from Jerusalem gathered around Jesus, and they saw some of his disciples eating food with unclean hands. Now, as I mentioned to the children, this is not a hygiene issue. This is not about, germ theory, right? Germ theory is centuries in the future at this point. Nobody has an idea there are germs. They have an idea that there are two categories of people. There's ordinary common people. There's just all of us. And then there's people who have been sanctified, that they've done something. They've gotten right with God in a special way, and they're now holy. And that has like a half-life, right? Because we live in a compromised world. And so even if you make yourself holy, you're going to get contaminated before long, and then you'll be back where everybody else is. You'll be a regular person. You'll be an unclean person. You have to actively clean yourself from your ritual impurity in order to be at that higher level. But otherwise, you just drop back down to where everybody else is. So it's not about hygiene. It's not about germ theory. These are religious experts. They're not doctors. Nobody's worried about a pandemic. They're saying you're not washing your hands, and that means you are common. Literally, the word in here talking about unclean hands, it says with unclean hands. Literally, that means common hands. So ordinary, regular, everyday hands. And they should be washing their hands in order to get this higher level of purity. And the idea here, it actually makes some sense. So here's what the idea is. Okay, in the law, in the Jewish law, there's things that say the priests, as part of becoming prepared to do their work, to offer sacrifices to God, they have to wash their hands. They have to make their hands ritually clean. And what somebody along the way said, well, look, if it's good for the priest, it's good for everybody else too. This idea of let's put some guardrails up around the law. The law says just the priests, but let's kind of back away from that a little bit. Nobody wants to go over the cliff, so let's back a little bit away and let's put up a guardrail there so that now we know that everybody is safe because everybody's washing their hands before they do things. And so it's this idea of, you know, I'm going to have the law plus a little bit more just to be safe. So this idea of putting up guardrails, a fence around the law to make sure that we don't violate the law. And there's a logic to that. There, you know, it has a certain appeal. And I'm glad that I don't have to weigh in on it because Jesus has. Jesus has said, well, it may have a certain appeal, but it's wrong. So they complained to Jesus. Mark has this long explanation to people who aren't familiar with this practice. Then in verse 5, the Pharisees and the legal experts asked Jesus, why are your disciples not doing what they're supposed to be doing? Why are they not living according to the rules handed down by the elders, but instead eat food with ritually unclean hands? In other words, common hands. Why are they not acting like common people? Why aren't they acting like priests? And, you know, the letter of the law says because they're not priests. Why would they act like priests? They're not, right? But Jesus doesn't answer that question. Instead, Jesus says, let's talk about these traditions of the elders. So, and by the way, for any of you who are Methodists, I will point out the word for elder here is Presbyterian. So the traditions of the Presbyterians. So, Jesus says, Isaiah really knew what he was talking about when he prophesied about you hypocrites. He wrote, this people honor me with their lips, but their hearts are far away from me. Their worship of me is empty since they teach instructions that are human words. So he says, that's the problem with these traditions of the elders. They are human words. And he says, you ignore God's commandment while holding on to rules created by humans handed down to you. Now, you can imagine, you can imagine, how they got there, in the case of the ritual purity. But Jesus says, well, there's like chapters in the law on ritual purity. So let me give you a clear example that will make it very obvious what you're doing. And then you can generalize from that to the problem of ritual purity. So he says, let's take an example. Jesus continued, clearly you're experts at rejecting God's commandment in order to establish these rules. What do you mean, Jesus? He says, Moses said in the law that Moses received at Mount Sinai, Moses came down with the two tablets and on it was written, honor your father and mother. So it's part of the Ten Commandments. And then there's a bunch of other laws about how to behave in a family. And one of them says, the person who speaks against father or mother will certainly be put to death. Now, before you try that on your children, the word speak evil, speak against father or mother, it's a very strong word. It means to curse. So it's like, I hope you're dead. It's very strong. You'd say, well, it's still too strong, right? But the point is not that they were always killing their children. The point is that this is an important law, that it's in the Ten Commandments, and it's a very important law because there's all this other law that supports it and strengthens it in different ways. So Jesus is saying, you know, you're legal experts. You know how important this law is. But you've decided that there's another law that's more important. So what is that? He says, you say, if you tell your father or mother everything I'm expected to contribute to is korban, that is, a gift I'm giving to God, you're no longer required to care for your father or mother. So there was this practice called korban, which is kind of like we might say a living trust or something. You know, I or a reverse mortgage or something like that, right? I'm going to get the use of it during my life, but when I die, it goes to the temple. So that's the idea. So I've dedicated this thing to God when I'm done with it. And so what they said, the legal experts, they said, fine, happy to have that, you know, glad it's coming to us someday. But if circumstances change, mom and dad ran out of money, you know, dad died, left mom without anything, she's destitute, you know, begging in the streets, I can't go back and say, hey, can I be let loose from my vow, right? Will you dissolve that vow? And they said, no, vows are important. That's in the Ten Commandments too.
Does this still happen?
No. Okay. This is first century, and one of the reasons is because Jesus taught against it. So Jesus changed our world in a lot of ways that are very important, and we're seeing one here. But there's a principle, so stay tuned. So they had this rule that said that you couldn't be released from your vow. And I don't know why. I don't know all the reasons. I'm sure that there's, you know, great passages that explain this. But my guess is that it had to do with a vow is before God, whereas your mother and father are just people. I'm guessing that that's where the thinking was. But Jesus says, you know, in elsewhere, Jesus says, get right with your brother or sister and then worry about God. God can wait. So I'm thinking that that's what the idea is here. But Jesus is saying, you've made this decision. You've said, no, people should realize vows are important. They shouldn't be entering into vows lightly. And if mom and dad have to starve, well, the important thing is that the vow is being kept. And Jesus is saying, where did you get that? Right? That's a man-made interpretation. And, you know, who told you that the second commandment versus the fifth commandment, who told you how to rate these two, right? And so, and more to the point, who told you that when you did it, you could then make everybody else obey it too? Jesus says, no, that's not how this works. So he says, you've made your rules that you're then telling everybody else they have to obey. So he says, you're making a mistake in the first place to have these authoritative interpretations that you can interpret things in such a way that they take precedence over God's law. But then he says, okay, now back to the topic of what contaminates people. Right, I haven't forgotten that. So he calls the crowd over and says, all right, I'm done schooling the religious experts. I want everybody to hear this. So he calls the crowd and says, listen to me, all of you. Pay no attention to these idiots. Right? He says, nothing outside of a person can enter and contaminate a person in God's sight. Rather, the things that come out of a person contaminate the person. So he then leaves the crowd to chew on that and then goes into a house where his disciples go, huh? So they asked him about that riddle, and he said, don't you understand either? Don't you know that nothing from the outside that enters a person has the power to contaminate? And no, we did not know that. We've grown up thinking that, of course, it has the power to contaminate us. And Jesus says, no, it doesn't. That's because it doesn't enter into the heart but into the stomach, and it goes out into the sewer. It passes right through you. That if you're in the right state, that's the way it will be. So I was trying to think of an example of this, right? So imagine that you're allergic, right? So let's say you're allergic to cats, right? Then if you pet a cat, you'll swell up the hand sanitizer. If you're allergic to hand sanitizer, right, you would say, okay, well, I'm allergic to hand sanitizer, therefore everybody else is too. It's like, well, no, that's not true, right? The reason it causes trouble is there's something wrong in me. Jesus says, normally, for you know, under ordinary circumstances, we would hope that if you eat that food or whatever, it passes through you, it does no harm, and it leaves, right? The only reason it causes trouble is if there's something wrong with you. If you have a overactive immune system or something, if there's some kind of response in you that makes that into a problem, then it's a problem. But no, under normal circumstances, it's not a problem. So Jesus says, yeah, it passes right through. So and Jesus says sewer. So there you go. If you ever wonder. So he concludes, he says, it's what comes out of a person that contaminates somebody in God's sight. It's not what goes in, it's what comes out. What do you mean, Jesus? He says, it's from the inside, from the human heart, that evil thoughts come. And then he lists a bunch. Sexual sin, thefts, murders, adultery, greed, evil actions, deceit, unrestrained immorality, envy, insults, arrogance, and foolishness. So he lists six thoughts and six actions and six attitudes. So probably meaning there's lots of other evil things. This is not a complete list, but it's enough to get the point. And we might say, well, wait a minute. I'm not sure all of those come from the inside, right? So we'd say, well, obviously if somebody's arrogant, right, that's not because, you know, you people are so stupid, right? It's because I have an arrogance problem, right? That's pretty obvious. But how about something like adultery or murder, right? And Jesus would say, well, yes, there is another person involved. But again, think back to that example with the allergy, right? It's not the cat's fault that you're allergic to cats. Lots of people have no trouble with cats. You're the one who has the trouble with the cats. So Jesus says, yeah, if you're involved in adultery or murder or things like this, that's a you problem, not a them problem. So here is the question. That's what Jesus says. Now here's the question. What if he's right? Right? You know, this is a church. We kind of start with the assumption Jesus is right. So what if he is right? What does it mean for us if Jesus is actually right about this? And I think that this question has some urgency because I see, you know, I'm just one observer, but I see our society is increasingly moving back to a mindset that those people out there will contaminate me, right? And so if I find out that you're watching the wrong TV channel, right, you get your news from that channel, you're dead to me, right? You have nothing useful to tell me because you've been contaminated. And if I interact with you, then I'll be contaminated. There are these wrong ideas. There's wrong people. There's things that actually somehow can get inside of us and turn us into bad people. So I see a lot of ways that our society, we've got all this language about cancel culture and disinformation. There's all these ideas that there's some threat out there and we need to repel it. We need to set up barriers. We need to have guardrails to keep those outside threats away from us. And so if Jesus is right, that means that those ideas aren't. So we have these ideas, guilt by association and things like that. And what that means for us is that sometimes those quick and ready solutions, right? Well, that person watches the wrong TV channel, right? That may not be really the best way of thinking about it. Now, I know your mom told you about that friend of yours that she said she really wished you'd quit hanging around with because they were a bad influence, right? And your mom was probably right, but you were 12 then, right? Or maybe you were 18, but you know, your cortex had not completely formed, right? So you're immature and you have a in loco parentis, or in this case, parentis, who is telling you what to do. So yes, sometimes there are external influences that are bad for us. And not only that, sometimes we're aware of a weakness inside of us. We know about the weakness and we say, well, I do need those guardrails. Billy Graham famously had the Billy Graham rule, right? He said, during the whole course of his ministry, he said, I will not be alone in a room with a woman who is not my wife. And he said, that's my guardrail. And what Billy Graham did not do is say, and you need to follow it too, and so do you, and you. That if you're not following my guardrail, if you're not following my rule, then you're a bad person. So you may need a guardrail. And, you know, that there may be people where you say, look, that person is going to invite me to go out drinking, and I'm trying to get sober. And so, yeah, I need to decouple from that person, right? But that's an individual thing. It doesn't mean that nobody else can go out drinking or even go out with that person, right? Because they don't need the same guardrail you do. So it's like saying, I'm allergic to cats, therefore nobody else can have a cat. Nobody else can have a cat because you must all be allergic to cats, or at least you would be allergic to cats if you were good people. And, you know, you dog lovers, yes. Yes. But that's the idea here. It's not the cat's fault. And it's the problem is inside of you. So if Jesus is right, now, it may be considerate. If you've got a friend and you know your friend has a cat allergy, then yeah, don't go rub, you know, what's a cat's name? Fluffy. That's more of a dog's name. What's a cat's name? Nova? Okay. All right. So anyway, all the pet names, I'm blanking here. Anyway, Frisky. That's a cat food. Anyway, Luke, back on track. So you may need to be considerate. Don't go rub your cat and then go over and, you know, pat your friend's head if you know your friend has a cat allergy. That's inconsiderate. And if they say, hey, you've got 12 cats at home and I'm allergic to cats, let's not go over to your house for dinner, right? Don't be put out of, you know, don't get your nose out of joint. Don't be insulted because they said your house isn't good for them, right? We can be considerate for people who need some kind of a guardrail, right? Billy Graham wanted a guardrail around the subject of sexual impropriety. So, you know, who am I to tell Billy Graham he was wrong about his morality, right? I don't know what he needed, but it's his rule. And if you need a rule, that's fine. But Jesus has something better in mind. Jesus has something better in mind than guardrails. When I was 15, I went to the doctor and got a tetanus shot. And my arm blew up. It got all red and swole up. And the doctor said, well, you're allergic to the tetanus shot material. And so for the next 40 years, I never had a tetanus shot. And then I got to Alaska, and I was here, and you might have noticed in the spring, I start talking kind of like RFK Jr. And, right? I have some kind of a problem in the back of my throat during the spring. And so we're looking at, is there something I'm allergic to? So I go over to the allergist, you know, the TUV hospital, right, place. And so I'm there seeing the doctors, and I'm seeing a doctor, and he's done all these tests, and no, I don't have any allergies on, you know, birch pollen or any of the things they tested for. And he you know, in the course of this conversation, I mentioned that the only allergy I'm aware of is to tetanus shots. And he looked at me and said, nah, you're not allergic to tetanus shots. And I said, oh, yeah, I really am. You know, my doctor has told me, and it's been 40 years, haven't had one. And he says, well, let's fix that today. And I said, well, no, let's not. And he goes, look, if I'm wrong, you're in a building full of allergists, right? What better place to have an allergic reaction? And I think about it and say, okay, that actually makes sense. And so he gave me the shot, and now I'm immune from tetanus infections because he was right. Now, I don't know, was he right? Was my old doctor wrong, or did something change in me in the meantime? But if you think about that allergy example, imagine you could live your life with guardrails. You could say, oh, I better not do that. I better not do that because I have this allergy, because I need that guardrail. But what Jesus is saying is, how about a life without guardrails? Because that's what I came to do. I came to change you on the inside. I came to make it so you don't even need the guardrail. So, if you're following in the bulletin, Jesus puts right what's wrong inside of us. Let's pray. Father God, we give you thanks that Jesus realizes and teaches that we are all different, and the things that tempt one of us may not tempt the other. And he gives us a new way of coexisting with other people who are struggling in their own ways. Lord, help us to be more like Christ, to not insist that other people do the things that we think might help, but to focus on ourselves and what's wrong with us on the inside. And Lord, help us to trust that Jesus can actually change us on the inside. We pray it in his holy name and for his sake. Amen.